Okay, so this is, I think, I guess our last Pisk. No, for sure. I bet there's. I think I'm giving Piskei Korona theoretically at some point. I have to look what day. But the last of our quarantine Piskei Korona, and this is not something I think I'm giving all year, unless there's a huge demand for it. I will go back to my normal Shirim, Agadata, and we'll see what else. Psak, and we'll see. But
that something else could be Piskei Korona.
It could be. I don't really want it to be. I mean, I'm happy to do contemporary halacha and integrate some of them. But the way I've been doing it now, just sort of reading through Tshuva, I don't know if I'd continue that way. But we'll see. If you really want to, we always can do that. Hello, Shua. How are you? Okay, so let's see.
I'm doing very well.
Great. Oh, you're in the base, I see. Or somewhere with a clock on the wall, which I think is the base. No?
27.
They have a clock on the wall. Look at you. Real people. Okay. Fine. So, the first psak we went through of Usher Weiss was very heavy tshuva. Then we did the question of if you led to someone's death, how do you get tshuva for that? Then we dealt with some issues of defining pikuach nefesh. Then we dealt with Bikur Cholem. I figured we should at least do one halachic issue that is just, less directly medical, more Rosh Hashanah-y themed, and less heavy. So that's what we're going to do. Okay, we're going to do a much lighter one. And that is the question of, okay, guys, as we know, Rosh Hashanah is going to be a little bit crazy. We don't know what it'll look like, but all shuls all over the world, wherever there are cases, things are going to look a little bit different. And in many places, they'll be davening outside, and it might be hot. So, or they just want to minimize the amount of time that people are around others. So everyone's been asking, okay, well, what do we do with davening? How do we shorten davening? Right, that's the question everyone's been asking, okay? And there have been multiple answers that are given. So tell me, right, if I threw it out to you, right, and you now are being, a community is turning to Rabbi Gaffi and saying, this is our situation. So, what do you tell them?
They say in Chazrat HaShatz, you can knock out a lot of the peer team.
Okay, so I'm going to highlight one word that you said. Gavi says the first thing I tell them is you can cut out Piyutim. Now, I'll turn it back to you, Rabbi Gavi. Do you want to leave the word it can, or do you want to switch the word can?
Assuming that it's the ideal to be shortening davening, then I can switch it to should.
Okay, good, right? This is going to be the question. Is obviously, the first thing to possibly go is going to be Piyutim. But one answer might be, look, if you really have to, you can. The other might be, you should. Right? The obvious benefit of doing that is that Piyutim are the kol hadeot. They're not obligatory. What's the problem? Rami, looks like he wants to say something. Well, good.
I was going to bring in like a... I would say, like, I do have a little bit of an insider idea. My father is president of a shul, and so, like, and they've been, like, really trying to focus on, like, what to do it. So I've overheard like a lot of ideas.
Okay, good. So Rabbi Gavi and president of the board, Rami. Okay, good. So yeah. President of the board, Rami, go.
I just heard various things suggesting it's possible you could shut you could only have 30 shofar blasts, take all the shofar blasts and just have it as a separate sort of communal event.
Good. So we could also we could play around with shofar, right? Do it separately. Do it in the street. Do it right. Good. Okay.
You could presumably cut out Torah reading.
Good.
Entirely.
Good. Now, what's the cost of all these things? So let's start. The cost of what Rami just said is obvious, right? Especially the last one. Kriyat Torah is a chiyuv. So cutting that out, it's got to be pretty extreme. Okay? That doesn't mean it's not mutter, right? When it was really, right, when they shut everything down and said, don't go to shul, so none of us heard Kriya Torah. That was what it was, right? If that's what you have to do, that's what you have to do. But, let's take Gavi's suggestion, piyutim. Okay, so there, right, you're not losing a chiyuv, but what's the cost to telling people to not say all the piyutim? What's the cost?
I mean, the only thing I can say is that, like, you lose sort of the, high holiday feel.
Yes, thank you. That's the only thing. You're representing the president of the board. That's the type of thing you should say, which is people come to shul and they want Unitana Tokef and they want, they have the tunes that they like and they've heard for a million years. And that's meaningful, right? Meaning, Rosh Hashanah davening, the piyutim are there for a reason. They may not be a chiyuv, but they're there to give a certain feel. And let's be honest, you know, it drives me a little bit crazy on Rosh Hashanah, but in many shuls, the piyutim, which are not obligatory, they sing for hours, and the psukim, which you're obligated to say, according to some Rishonim d'oraita, they say, v'nemar b'v, v'nemar b'v, right? We all know the things that are not chiyuv people play up, the things that are chiyuvim people don't, if it doesn't have a nice tune, so then they don't play down. And in Israel, it's less popular in America, but in Israel it's very popular, is the one song on Yom Naran that drives me up the wall, which is the V'nemar song. I can't handle it. It drives me crazy. They never did this in my shul growing up in Staten Island, but in Israel they do it, which is when they get to V'nemar in the Psukim. Anyone know what I'm talking about? No? V'nemar, V'nemar, V'nemar. So V'nemar, V'nemar, V'nemar. And they go on forever. So they spend no time in the Pasuk, but they say the word V'nemar like 40 times. Right? I can't stand it. It drives me absolutely crazy. But let's be honest, right? The cost of cutting out the piyutim or the songs or whatever is that people lose the feeling of Rosh Hashanah, which is something that you do need to at least think about, because when you're making a psak, you're not just saying, as Gavi said, what are you allowed to do? What are you can do? You're telling people what's the right thing to do, what's the best thing to do, and the answer might not be cut out every last thing that you possibly can, right? Now, part of the reason that shofar blowing this year is a little bit less, like lower stakes, is that, as the guys in my share know, and we've talked about ad nauseum, is on the first day of Rosh Hashanah.
Right,
we're not blowing the shofar on the first day because it's not, because that's the Doraita. It's only the second day, which is Derabbanan to begin with, so it is more malleable than in a normal Rosh Hashanah, right? Because in a normal year, it would be obvious. Do the biblical one. Go for shofar blowing. This year, there is no biblical shofar blowing. So it's, right? So everything is a little bit less costly in that sense, in terms of formal chiyuvim. Okay, so let's look at two or three responses and suggestions of what we are...
So about the piyutim, though?
Yeah.
You know, if you're concerned about losing the piyutim, the majority of them, you know, maybe one or two exceptions, can be said also beyachid.
Oh, very good. So the other, and this is very good, and probably
the entire communal setting.
Oh, good. So probably.
Like, you're right, but
So Gavi, perfect. So Gavi knows me already a little bit, and Gavi knows that when I talk about Psak, I think about Psak, right? A good posek is not just one who has good lomdus, but it's someone who has good practical suggestions, right? Meaning Psak is practical. It's not just the theoretical. It's not just the lomdus. When someone asks you a practical shayla, sometimes the best way of dealing with it is practically. Right? It's just saying, look, we can avoid the halakhic issues, and here's my practical suggestion. Rami doesn't like it, but that's part of psak, like it or not. Right? A good psak might be, right, look, a posek could say, you're allowed to skip piyutim, but you could also set up a minyan of exactly 10 in a very, 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 very large backyard or park, right, where there's zero risk, and have a 4-hour davening or 5-hour davening of all the people who want, and that would be good for the people who want all the piyutim, right? Psak has to integrate a little bit of common sense with the halachic advice, and that's why I pushed Gavi on the can should, right? The first question is to think about what is possible halachically. The second question is, okay, here's my range of things I can do within the realm of halacha. Now what should I do? And there, like it or not, Rami, you've got to take into account some non-lumdish possibilities and factors, right?
There are problems with that. I'm thinking a lot of like logistic things that my father is...
100%. But you got to understand that a good psak will take that into account, right? Or a good... right. The good implementation of halacha will include pragmatic concerns as well, right? Meaning, let me give you a very simple example, okay? Right? Technically, right, you will... right. Many of us have two sinks in our homes. Not all of us. Many of us have two sinks in our homes. There is no halacha anywhere that says we need two sinks in our homes. At all. You can use one sink. When I lived in Washington Heights, I had one sink. You can use the same sink for milk and meat. You just got to be careful that the dishes that are milk and meat aren't sitting there together in hot water, right? It's at, you know, things like that. Because then you could trafe up the pots. But if someone comes to you and says, you know, what's the easiest way to keep a kosher kitchen? I have a lot of space in my kitchen, right? I have a huge space, a huge counter. I can have two sinks. I think most rabbis would tell them, look, you don't have to have two sinks, but you want to make your life easier, have two sinks, and this way you won't mix it up, right? That's halachic advice. It might not be, you're not mechuyav to do it, right? And if someone says, I can't do it, you'd say, okay, well, then this is how you deal with that situation. But many of us have two sinks just because it's helpful, right? It's, you know, it's the same reason. No one will tell you need a Pesach kitchen, right? But many people want a Pesach kitchen because it's not, they don't feel like koshering, right? They would rather just have a second kitchen. Okay. That's, you know, you have to take that into account when someone asks you a shayla, right? If someone says, Rabbi, how do I prepare for Pesach? You could give them a whole shiur on koshering and this and that. Or you could say, how many kitchens do you have? And if they say, what do you mean? I have two kitchens. I have a Pesach kitchen. So then you know the answer is, okay, koshering's not a problem. Let's talk about cleaning, right? Meaning, right, right, logistics are part of the practical implementation of psak. Okay, so let's look at a few suggestions. Okay, so let me start with Rav Schechter's psak. Oh, sorry, 1 second. I didn't copy it here. I'll pull it up. But let's start with Rav Schechter. Rav Schechter put out a psak just this week. So let's start with Rav Schechter.
My community was specifically waiting for the sort of local rabbinical council to like issue something, and they've just been slow. So I know this had to be recent.
Yes, it was. It was 2 days ago. Yes, it was 2 days ago, and you can already see. I'll share the screen, but you can see it was 2 days. It was posted in YU Torah 2 days ago. And this is not the only place it was published, but you can see it already has 492 views and 275 downloads. You're not, you know, everyone has been waiting for Psak, okay? Everyone wants to know what to do. So here's Rav Schechter's relatively short treatment of it, okay? So he says as follows, okay? Who wants to try Rav Schechter's psak? And just so you know, the next psak we're going to look at is Rabbi Willig. It's in English. So if someone wants to hold off volunteering, I definitely want one of you to volunteer for Rabbi Willig because, you know, it's English. If you don't want
to... I'll volunteer to read this, but was it really necessary to use Rashi script?
Okay, you don't have to read it. I can read Rav Schechter. Rami, it's fine. You can have Rabbi Willig, okay? Rabbi Willig is English, okay? And it's big and bold. I know. This is small Rashi script. I get it. I see it. I see it also. Okay, I'll read it. Rashi beperish ala Torah. Rashi says, Ze keli v'anveyu. On the pasuk of this is my God and I will glorify him. He says, Lo ani tchilat hakdusha. I'm not the beginning of the holiness. Ela muchzeket v'omedet li hakdusha. Velo... And he says, the way Rashi interprets it is, I'm not the beginning of this relationship with God. I am part of a chain that went back to my forefathers. Right. So here, Rav Schechter already starts this piece with a more of a hashkafic pastoral statement. And he says, look, Hamechayev l'kayim mitzvot hukedusha Yisrael shel ha'adam. What makes us obligated in mitzvot in general is the fact that our kedushat Yisrael, ukedushat Yisrael ba lanu me'avoteinu, and we get this kedusha. We're inherited it. We're part of a nation. Sha'anu gam gen maminim bo yitparach. Uman mevar b'gemara b'nidarim shel yesh bal chel derabanan al minagim. And the Gemara Nidarim goes farther and tells you that if you violate minagim, you violate the prohibition of violating vows, at least rabbinically, of bal yachel, etc. Kai gam al minagim tovim shi kibel yachid al atzmo. And he says that that goes even on minhagim that are private, gam al minage kila, communal minhagim, midor hakodmim, and as Gavi probably knows from me and has heard from me 100 times, the exact way that minhagim play out in modern times and minhagim mishpacha is complicated. But the point is, there's a value, there's a notion of a personal commitment and a communal commitment. Communities can accept customs. And that's really what seems to bind you to minhagim, is there's a level of communal acceptance. Vinyan chamor hu li'izayr minhagim. He says it's important to keep minhagim. As the Maharil says, she'mita bito et tzi'ira v'chala v'tala davar ba'onish min ha'shamayim al sheshina b'pratei minhag shalchara piyutim. The Maharil, and here's a little bit of a scare tactic, said that his daughter died young, and he thought that the reason was because he changed a piyut. That sounds a bit extreme to me, but that's what the Maharil writes. V'ulai kavanato bazeh sheminu mamshich v'nege derot kodmim. So maybe what he means is if you don't change, if you change that which was passed from your parents, you lose your schut in some way for children, which is quite extreme. Because you're preventing the continuity to the future generations. Because the blessing of children is because so you can continue the tradition. And if you can't continue the tradition, so why should you have children? Rabbeinu Agridzal and the Rav, Rabbi Soloveitchik, I am a makpid b'chol minagim, sh'nizk b'shulchan aruch, afil b'makom sh'kfar kadam mishnaburush, minagim lo eilu kfar nit batlu. The Rav was machmer minagim, even though as the mishnaburush said, you don't have to keep anymore. So the first thing he sets out is, now why, Rav Shechter is about to tell you, you're allowed to get rid of piyutim. Why do you think he starts with half a page of a the importance of minhagim and mesorah and a little bit of scare tactics, right? Why is he doing that pastorally? I'm just guessing. Because I think what Rav Shechter wants to remind you is, even if he's about to say you're allowed to get rid of the piyutim, he doesn't want you to think that this was a decision he took lightly or that you should take lightly. Right? He's saying there is a cost. Meaning, yes, it's only a minhag, but minhag is important too. Right? Minhag is important two. So therefore he says, look, if the minhag goes against halacha, you don't keep the minhag, for sure. Etc. And he proves it that the Netziv, who understands Sugi and Bracha, that if you didn't come to shul one day, even though you normally come, because of a Dvar Mitzvah, that's fine, even though you've bound yourself to come to this particular shul because of Minhag. Okay, so you see that when there's a Minhag against Halacha, you always follow the Halacha. V'chein Hisbir Agri Gustman. V'chavana Rambam, that's what Rav Gustman says in the Rambam, Sheitz Mitzvah, Litzlot, Ekol HaKarbon Pesach B'yachid, Mitam Minhag, Ein Lechol Shuman Agid, that there's a mitzvah to roast the whole garment Pesach, but because of minhag, we don't eat the fat around the gid. Normally, we not only do we not have the gid hanasha, we don't have the fat around the gid hanasha. But on Pesach, the Rambam says we do eat it. Why? Because even though we normally want to be extra careful with the gid hanasha, when there's a mitzvah to eat the garment Pesach, so we keep the ikra din. We don't eat the gid, but we eat the fat around the gid. Okay. Because now there's a contradiction between minhag and halacha. You always follow the minhag. So therefore he quotes And he says, but the Dagol Mervava says, the only time you need Hatarat Nidarim to get rid of a minhag is if you're getting rid of it forever. But when there's extenuating circumstances, every so often, you know, you just got to get rid of the minhag because there's extenuating circumstances. In that case, you don't even need to nullify vows. And he says, Rabbi Kiva Eger, during the cholera epidemic, Rabbi Kiva Eger has several famous tshuvot and letters that have become well-read in the last few months on what to do during a pandemic, because he had the cholera pandemic in his time. He says, Uvashe v'shan ma'gevet acholi hanireh, because of that, Rabbi Kiva Eger said, in the time of the cholera epidemic, get rid of all the piyutim. To minimize the amount of time that people are next to each other.
Did he also like make Kiddush on Yom
Kippur? No, that's Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. That was in a different case. Also cholera epidemic, but this is Rabbi Kiva Eger during the cholera epidemic. That's Rabbi Yisrael Salanter during the cholera epidemic. Good. And he says they didn't need atar nedarim. The kaimelon, the bikuach nevesh doche kol darakula. Vein tzarach latir nedarim. He said, what's the reason? Obvious. Pikuach nevesh overrides the whole Torah. So obviously it's going to get rid of a minhag, right? Like that's just built into the nature of minhag. And he says, this is what the Griz quoted from his father, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, who had told someone in Yom Kippur to eat as much as he needed. Right? Why? Why was he telling him to eat as much as he needed and not telling him to minimize it? He says, She'ein anyan she'aviv ha'gon Reb Chaim, because he said, Reb Chaim was not hayamei kil b'hilchot Shabbat chalila. It's not that Reb Chaim was lenient about hilchot Shabbat or Yom Kippur. El shayam machmer b'hilchot pikuach nefesh. He was machmer b'pikuach nefesh. Va'aleinu litz'od v'linehog b'gvot rabotenu g'on Reb Kiva Eger, Reb Chaim v'vlozhen v'gon Reb Chaim Soloveitchik va'od. La'achmer b'nyani pikuach nefesh. And therefore we have no choice but to give up some minagim. Please God, next year things will be normal again. Okay, that's Rav Schechter. Now, does Rav Schechter say you can get rid of piyutim? Yes, right?
He says you should.
So first he says can. Definitely you can. Does he say you should? He thinks you should, right? Does he distinguish between which piyutim and not? No.
No.
And what's his argument? As much as you can minimize it, you should this year. This is very much a pikuach nefesh comes first, and even if there might be cost, he doesn't tell you. Now, does he tell you that you're not allowed to set up a safe way to say some more davening? He doesn't tell you that. He doesn't tell you. But fundamentally, Rav Schechter is focusing on you can, and therefore you should, minimize piyutim. He doesn't say get rid of them entirely. He's not clear. He does seem to advocate minimizing as much as possible. But that's Rav Schechter. Now, as we said, the counter pressure here, as Rav Schechter himself already notes, is that minhagim are important, and more, even more balabatishly, as Rami said before, not that Rami necessarily, I won't say Rami cares about this, he's a pure halachist here, but Rami acknowledges this is something that's taken into account.
You don't want to have this, not have this, what a Rosh Hashanah feel.
Right, and that is a real cost, right? Rav Schechter brings the formal view here, which is minhagim are important, but there's also the very simple concern here, which is, you know, there are practical, right? There's a practical issue here, which is, are people in shul going to rebel? Right? Or are they not going to feel Rosh Hashanah, which is a cost? So, here's Rabbi Willig's version of this, and you'll see. Halachically, he fundamentally agrees with Rav Schechter, but you'll see that there is certain sensitivities here that Rav Schechter at least didn't spell out, or maybe Rav Schechter doesn't agree with. I'm not 100% sure, right? But let's look at Rabbi Willig. Okay, Rami, I promised you could take it. So, here, English, in non-Rashi script English, shockingly. Good.
Okay, yeah. All right. So the coronavirus presents a serious ongoing danger. Doctors have warned that public gatherings can spread the virus unless proper precautions are taken. They recommend outdoor gatherings if possible and require masks and social distancing. As a result, many questions have arisen concerning Rosh Hashanah 5781. Each shul should follow the psakim of its own rav. What follows are merely my suggestions, which may be implemented in our own shul, depending on the facts on the ground come Rosh Hashanah. The main issue is the need to shorten the davening Rosh Hashanah morning in order to reduce the risk. In addition, it's difficult for many to keep masks on for long periods of time. Furthermore, for the outdoor minyanim, it is hard, and for some even dangerous, to remain in a potentially very hot tent for a extended tefillah. Finally, it might be necessary to have two consecutive minyanim in shul, since it may not be filled to capacity as per health and or legal reasons. For example, an hour shul davening on Rosh Hashanah typically lasts for 6 hours. How could it be reduced to 3 hours?
Right, so first thing is that note, right, Willig, right, Rav Schechter presented this very much as, here's a theoretical psak. Rav Willig is much more in Rami's father's camp here, is, here's my practical suggestions for shuls. And in addition to the danger, let's talk pragmatic issues. It's hot outside, you might have to have multiple minyanim to minimize people, right? He tells you as it is, right? These are the practical issues. So how do we integrate the halacha into constructing practical suggestions for shul? Okay, so, Here. Yeah, go.
All right, so it is critical to preserve the primary ingredients of Rosh Hashanah experiences that the tzibur is accustomed to and anticipates. Rama and Or HaChaim states, one may not change the custom of a city, even the tune sung in the pitim that they say there. Mishnah Berurah explains that the changes confuse the kahal. If we omit a tune or a devotional piyut, the kahal may become confused and or disappointed. The lesser of these evils would be to omit the pitim accompanied neither by tunes nor by tears. These literary masterpieces, primarily authored by Rabbi Elazar Kalir, Day 1, and by Rav Shimon ben Yitzchak HaGadol, Shacharis Day 2, should be studied and even recited at home during the course of Rosh Hashanah.
Right, so here, right, Willig comes up with, right, this is what a combination of what Gavi suggested, right, he says, here's his suggestion. Does he agree with Rav Schechter fundamentally that you can cut out piyutim?
Yes.
100%. But here he's bringing in the practical concern, right? Rav Schechter said, look, you're allowed to get rid of the piyutim, there's a danger, do it. He doesn't make it clear that every shul should get rid of all the piyutim, but, right, Ray Willig is much more explicit. And he said, look, there's a cost to getting rid of the piyutim, which is, that's what people connect to, and the Rama records that. So what's his suggestion? He says, look, there are piyutim that people connect to, and there are ones that people don't, right? There are the piyutim that the chazan mumbles through, right? And they're the ones that everyone sings together. He said, start with, right, the lesser of two evils, as he said, is the piyutim that people don't have an emotional connection to, they aren't connected to the tunes, right? Those obviously, this is the year to let them go. And if you want to accomplish the value of keeping minhagim, so find time to study those piyutim, as Gavi notes, at some other point in Rosh Hashanah. But to maintain some sort of Rosh Hashanah experience, which for most people is not the halachic part of davening, the piyutim and the tunes they've been singing for 20, 30, 50, 75 years, right, what he says is, look, you're allowed to get rid of all the piyutim, but you want to somehow balance that with people's experience of Rosh Hashanah. How do you do that? Pick the piyutim that people connect with the most and the ones they don't connect to. So those are the first to go. And then he gives examples, right, such as in Shachris, only Atu Elokeinu and Lekel El Rechdin, and their brief introductions and conclusions will be respectively sung and recited. In Musaf, only Melech Elyon on day one, and Unitana Tokef will precede Kedusha. From Kedusha on, we'll daven as usual, but if necessary, at a somewhat faster pace. Right, this is very much a shul rabbi integrating Rav Schechter's fundamental theoretical position and saying, look, you are allowed to do this, but I know you can't get rid of all of them. So here's the ones that people connect to the most. Say those, nothing else, and daven more quickly. Okay, right? That's a... right, and he says, right, continue, Rami. The lengthy Mishaberach.
So, Yeah, so as such.
Well, I read that. Right, the next, the lengthy Mishabera.
Will only be recited not once. Yeah, not seven times as usual. The beginning of Shacharis will be recited individually, in shul or at home. At the appointed times, the chazan will begin at Nishmas, which is the beginning of the bracha, which ends with Ishtabach. Even those coming from home should not speak in the middle of Pesukei Dezimra, even though, oh, from the perspective of Hefsek, it would be better to start after Ishtabach. It is more desirable that the Baal HaShacharis begins with the traditional hunting chant of HaMelech.
Right, so you see that here Ray Willig is very much balancing the necessity of maintaining a Yom Ha'aram experience with Halacha. He said, look, there are halachic benefits to starting after Ishtabach in Shul. But if you don't start with HaMelech, right, people are really going to lose their experience of Rosh Hashanah. So it's worth running the risk of a little bit of hesek, which again, minimize as much as possible. Don't talk from Pesukei Dezimra and run to Shul. But right, he's very much trying to balance what's technically mutter with having a Rosh Hashanah experience. Right? And then he mentions what Rami said before, right? Shofar itself. Yeah.
So the custom of 100 shofar blasts is not recorded in the Shulchan Aruch. The Mishnah Berurah quotes it from the Sela.
Shalah.
If necessary, the last 40... Shelah.
The Shelah,
If
right?
necessary, the last 40 blasts after Musaf concludes. As mentioned, doctors agree that the risk is reduced outdoors, and many are dominating outside as well. Some doctors are concerned with the aerosols from the shofar. To allay these fears, the shofar can be blown near a door, if feasible, so the air goes outside.
Right. I won't get into the mask on the shofar. That's an interesting shayla, which I still have to sit down with. I've seen different psakim on it, but if you've seen they've put masks on the shofar, I don't know how, you know, that's an interesting question. Okay, yeah. Yeah?
So
he does bring it up here, yeah?
Covering the wide end of the shofar, yeah, with a mask. However, if this changes the sound of the shofar, the mitzvah is not filled. It is reported that a very tight fit, such as a rubber band, changes the sound. Therefore, a loose fit must be used, and it must be tested into in advance to make sure the mask does not change the sound of the shofar. In case of consecutive minyanim are held, Rav Herschel Shachler ruled that one chazan may lead chazars hasha'atz multiple times for different minyanim, if needed, as seen through in Mishnah Berurah. Revivos Ephraim agrees. The Divrei Yaakov asks many poskim, and they said it is obviously permitted. Therefore, while the Mishnah Berurah is not conclusive, it may refer to one who davened at the first minyan but was not the chazan, it is nevertheless permissible. Some wish to use a Somet microphone for outdoor minyanim. This device has not been accepted by the American poskim.
Right, Somet is an organization here in which deals with technology on Shabbos issues and other things, but yeah.
Somet has developed an infrared thermometer based on their notion of grama. This too is not universally accepted. Therefore, if there is a need, many doctors question its accuracy when entering a building. A non-Jew should use a thermometer as a shvush to shvush, which is permissible in a case of need.
Meaning a double derabanan, right? Yeah. The merit of our strict...
The merit of our strict adherence halacha and our strict adherence to responsible medical guidelines, may we all merit a ksiva chasima tova.
Good. So, fundamentally, I would say Rav Shechter and Rav Willig agree on the piyutim, except, right, and here's what I want to note, is that the tshuvot read very differently, right? Rav Willig's tshuva reads much more like someone who is a first-rate posek and also a shul rabbi, right? Because he's very aware of the fact that there's what's mutter and what he can actually pull off in his shul, right? Now, there may be places, and as he said, he's also saying what's going to work for his shul. He's saying there are other shuls where maybe they'll say more piyutim, and somewhere they might say none at all, right? But you see that, right, Rav Shechter starts off his tshuva by saying minhagim are important, formally, but pikuach nefesh is doche. The practical implication is basically don't say piyutim this year. Not that you, right? I don't know if Rav Shechter would say that in a place where it's safe, you could say some, and maybe you should say some of it. I don't know. It's not clear. But he does seem to say, look, formally, pikuach nefesh overrides, so don't say it. Ray Willig agrees fundamentally, but he recognizes there's a balance, not just the formal value of minhagim, but practically, people need a Rosh Hashanah experience. They need that, and therefore his suggestion is, like Rav Schechter, is cut down butim as much as possible, but he tells you, but try to keep in the butim that people really need, right? Don't, and if it means speeding up davening, if it means, even though, yes, davening, the actual davening is more important than the butim, right? You need to try to compromise, not just, right, on the formal issues, but you need to have a practical guidance of what to do here. And, you know, I saw last night someone posted, shared from Rabbi Yisachar Katz, who is at Chovevei Torah, but also his Hasidish background, and his critique here of Schechter is more because of his Hasidish background, where he, right, in, right, doesn't love the extreme formality of Rav Schechter's tshuva for a lot of the reasons that are evident in the way Rai Willig frames his response, even if substantively they're similar, right? So this was his Facebook post response, right? And he writes, "Oy vey, halachic man run amok," right? Okay, I don't know if I would say that to Rav Schechter, but I, right, this sentiment, fine? He says, "Why you released another of Schechter's important Krona Psakim? These periodically released short SMs are a balm of healing Torah and also rare offer a rare window into Rav Schechter's judicial persona. They showcase his vast knowledge and convey his immense sensitivity. The latest one is no different. It's stimulating and informative and also provides insight into a unique aspect of his halachic philosophy. Technically, this one merely reinforced an earlier psak, but the reasoning is a stronger reflection of his jurisprudential philosophy than the previous one. This one is a stark illustration of Rav Schechter as Rav Soloveitchik's halachic man personified. Halacha is his only jurisprudential prism. The value of every religious endeavor is determined exclusively by its halachic bona fides. Here's how. We are all in agreement that this year we'll have to abbreviate the high holiday tefillot. Extended exposure to other carries significant danger, and to avoid unnecessary risk, we will have to keep communal activities to a bare minimum. Being together for the duration of a typical Rosh Hashanah davening is therefore out of the question. Some of the liturgy will have to go. To correctly determine which sections of the tefillah are essential and which ones can be left out, we need to create a liturgical hierarchy. Which sections of the davening are crucial and which ones are negotiable? This essay is an attempt to answer this question. A close reading makes it clear that for Rav Schechter, this is purely a halachic question, and as such, his decision is, keep the tefillot and excise all the piyutim. His reasoning goes as follows. The actual tefillot are a chiyuv, whereas the piyutim are only a minhag. Minhagim are also obligatory, but in the halachic hierarchy, they are a rung or two less obligatory than halacha qua halacha. Therefore, if one has to go, it should be the piyutim. Categorizing the piyutim as minhag is debatable, but that's for another time. But the way I see it, this misses the point. Although it's been said before, it bears repeating, again and again. We don't recite the piyutim because we have to, we say them because we want to. The impetus to say them is to satisfy a spiritual yearning, not to fulfill a legal obligation. They give meaning to the davening. The tefillot are the lyrics, the piyutim are the tunes, and as such, go hand in hand. To determine their durability during Corona based on their place in the halachic hierarchy is therefore incorrect. Their essentiality transcends the confines of halacha. I would consequently offer a different way to go about the abbreviation. Since, as Rav Schechter points out, this is indeed a case of a possible Begoach Nefesh, it is legitimate to leave out some portions of the davening itself. Let us therefore skip Shacharit B'Tzibur completely, and let people say it at home by themselves. In fact, many posts can believe the davening tzibur isn't a chiyuv at all. This, in turn, will justify being together for a longer musaf. More time for musaf will allow us to daven musaf b'tzibur, and also enhance that tefillah with some of the piyutim, at least those that are foundational to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur experience. We should start with Kriyat HaTorah, then tkiyot, followed by musaf and some piyutim. Contra halachic man, the religious journey is informed by multiple sources, not just halacha. The religious quest, which has only halacha at its disposal, is narrow and confining because it makes no room for those moments when our neshamot overwhelm us and can't be contained by the parameters of halacha. In fact, that is what our tefillah is all about. We don't dive into fulfill an obligation. Prayer, instead, is the fuel that ignites our spiritual yearnings, and it also contains it. A Rosh Hashanah davening that makes no room for the poetics of religiosity therefore completely misses the point. So, again, without disagreeing with anybody, I want to point out that basically you have two and a half, or really three, very different responses to this, right? You have the somewhat formal approach of Rav Schechter, which is, minhagim are more important, halacha is more important, pikuach nefesh is more important, and therefore, if you need to cut down the time of davening, maximize tefillah, minimize or eliminate piyutim, right? Is that a fair description of Rav Schechter? Right? Everything is formal. Minhagim are important, but they're not as important. I think Ray Katz does a good job at summarizing Rav Schechter's analysis. All the way at the other extreme, you have Ray Katz capturing his more Hasidish approach here, which is, sometimes you've just got to give room to religious experience over halacha, right? And if that means that you daven shachris at home, which is maybe a chiyuv, maybe not a chiyuv, but definitely less experientially important, so daven at home if that's what you need to do for shachris, but daven as many of the piyutim as you can to give people the experience, right? That's the other extreme. And then you have Ray Willig, which is in the middle, which is, fundamentally...
I don't want to point fingers, but I will point out that the Hasidic Haredi community is...
He's not Haredi. He's Hasidish. And
COVID cases.
He's not Haredi. He was born Satmar, and now he teaches at Chobavei Torah. I would not call him Haredi, right? He is Haredi and left-wing open Orthodox, right? But his orientation towards halacha is Haredi. It's not Haredi, it's Hasidish. That doesn't mean... Okay, so I'm not pointing fingers, I'm not sociologically, that's where he finds himself. He is born Satmar, but he is in the YCT community. He is not Haredi, okay? So this is not a Hasid... This is not a Haredi psak. This is a open Orthodox, left-wing, modern Orthodox, Hasidishly inspired psak, okay? You know, I'm not judging here, I'm just describing, okay? But I think it is a good... I mean, he's setting himself up as a foil for Rav Schechter, and I do think it's helpful because it shows two different models. Rav Schechter judges it almost entirely on formal grounds. He judges it almost entirely on experiential grounds. I'll be honest that maybe it's because I'm a Talmud of Roy Willig, right? And in many ways, Roy Willig is my Rebbe in Psak. Maybe it's because, you know, I worked in a shul for a few years and I have some of those, you know, and picked up some of those sensitivities. I don't know what it is, but I'll be honest that my sympathies lie maybe with Ray Willig's presentation, which is fundamentally our barometer should be halacha. But in the halacha, we can't be absolutists and just say, look, whatever is more important halachically automatically comes first and everything else is nothing, right? Right, Willig is, as you see, is trying to balance it and saying, look, I'm not going to tell you daven shachris at home, but I am going to say rely on some kulot. So, daven until nishmat at home. Now, technically, you could gain 2 more minutes away from people and maybe make a benefit on hefsik by davening through yishtabach at home. But it's not worth the 2 minutes because people really want hamelech. Right, which starts with the Russian experience. Now, you have to deal with the halachic issue. So, don't talk. Which, at least, will minimize the hefsek. Right? Obviously, it might be ideal to start after Yishtabach. But losing those 2 minutes, there's a real experiential cost. He agrees with Rav Schechter. You can get rid of all the piyutim. He says, okay. But if you get rid of all the piyutim, people are going to lose the Russian experience. So, what's his solution? Say only the piyutim that really, really resonate with people. And try to find time to study the other piyutim during the day because they're still valuable. And right, what you see is, and again, you know, in many ways, like I said, I'm a Talmud Rabbi Willig, so maybe that's why it resonates the most with me, but it's a compromise between saying, look, I am a formalist, and I'm, you know, Rabbi Willig would never, I think, say, oh, daven shachris at home without a minyan so that you can say more piyutim during Musaf. Right? That's a very much precedence of experience over halacha. That Rabbi Willig is not saying. But he is saying, look, I'm willing to rely on a kula and allow you to walk to shul for nishmat, even though it's slightly better to wait till after Yishtabach, and just tell you don't talk, minimize the hefsek, because hamelech is important. I'm willing to tell you to stay in shul an extra 10 minutes to say unisana tokef, because people really resonate with unisana tokef. And if that means, not that you skip the rest of Musaf, but that you daven Musaf a little bit faster, so a pure formalist might say, oh, unisana tokef is a piyut, the rest of Musaf is a chiyuv. You shouldn't rush through the chiyuv for unisana tokef, but Rabbi Willig is saying, look, I'm not violating halacha by davening a little bit faster, right? It's maybe not ideal, but the whole year isn't ideal. So when you're balancing what ideals and less than ideal situations to take, you don't do anything which is asur. You obviously give precedence to that which is halacha, but it's legitimate to rely on some kulot to also recognize the experiential component of davening. And so I do think that if I had to categorize, you really get three models here. Right? Rav Schechter, which as Ray Katz, I think, nicely summarizes it, is an almost entirely formal model, which is, look, during a normal year, follow Menagim, but this year, just rate it. What is more halakhically important? You do. What isn't? Get rid of it. Ray Katz, which basically says, worry about experience more than halakha. And Ray Willig, who says, come up with a messy solution, right, that will, as much as possible, maximize the halakhic parts of davening in the most ideal way, but be willing to rely on kulot, but don't eliminate the recognition that at least giving some space for the experiential, the menhagim, is important. And if that means staying in shul an extra 10 minutes, that's probably not going to be what makes or breaks people's health. So it's worth recognizing the importance of people's experience. Again, right, Willig is saying, don't say all the piyutim. He's not saying, just let people experience Rosh Hashanah. He says it's an extenuating circumstance. But he's much more trying to compromise between the two extremes, so to speak, that Ray Schechter and Ray Katz sort of play out. So I do think that you see here three nice models in terms of how you deal with these circumstances. A much more formal model, a much more experiential model, and a much more messy compromise model that tries to integrate as much as possible both values. And again, I think recognizing that these are three different models is really important, because it gives us, right, at least it helps us clarify where we find ourselves and understand the way the different, right, halachists are thinking through these types of issues. Okay, so this was a much lighter issue, but I do think it's the pressing one, as this is our last, I think, Piskei Korona, at least together before Rosh Hashanah. And seeing the different models is definitely, I think, very helpful. I see that Rami wants the link, so...
Yeah, can I get the link?
Both Ray Schechter and Ray Willigs can be accessed on TorahWeb.org. But I'll, if you want, give me a minute and I'll give you the link, okay? Here. Here's Ray Schechter. Here's Ray Schechter's. One second. Here's Ray Schechter's. Ray Willig, I'll give you. One second. Ray Willig is here. Ray Willig is here. And the other was a Facebook post, so I can't share it on you. If you can, he might have made it public, and you can check it out. But, okay. So those are these three models. I think it gives us... you know, a framing of how to think about these issues, and in general, a framing of how to think about issues like this in the future, because you see different models of halachic thinking here. Okay?